Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Big show. Tim Kirchen at 10:30. Mike Tenenbaum at noon. Rick has promised us all sorts of little trinkets along the way. A doubled up. Observations, maybe a little game show at some point. So, Chris Canty, how are you on this Tuesday morning?
I'm doing well, Dave. We got a lot going on in the world of sports, and even though we don't have team sports in North America, it's starting to get really interesting, some of the posturing back and forth between the players and the governing bodies of those sports.
Yep, and we'll try to slice our way through that with Tim Kirchen at 10:30 and give our opinions before that. 800-919-3776 as always. And Rick, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Dave. We don't have sports here, but we do have live sports. Big win from my Dinos, baby. Come back in the ninth, tie it up, within the 10th. Better believe it.
Extra inning Korean baseball for you this morning.
Oh, yeah. A devastating loss, too. First loss of the season. A six-run lead early. Early six-run lead. We blew it. Came back today. Down
we,
to
you're
the
already
ninth.
A we?
Yeah, we're a we. And then find our way back and win it in the 10th. So good start to the morning after I got bamboozled yesterday. Completely bamboozled. My wife treated me like she was all of a sudden a Major League Baseball owner. Hey, how about we go downstairs and just clean up a little bit? Yeah, clean up, men. Let's just take the entire basement, take everything, and now relocate it all across the basement and just completely, for 3 straight hours, just rearrange the entire basement.
But this is the time.
Yeah, but there was no negotiation. This was, I was tricked. I was bamboozled. This is like the 50-50 split. This is what happened to me yesterday. I thought I was going down, little clean up, kids made a mess, just clean it up, this goes there, balls go here. No, no. This was easels are coming from
easels
upstairs.
Were
downstairs. I'm moving kitchens, I'm taking this stuff, I'm putting it in storage. I mean, it was craziness, Dave.
Was it successful at the end of the day?
It looks gorgeous, but I
see?
Can guarantee you by, yeah, but where do you think the kids were this morning?
Probably downstairs messing it up.
The basement, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
So it'll be a mess. And then I'll clean it up again. This is any parent knows. I mean, your day is it just what you do every day is in perpetuity. You put it away, they take it out. You put it away, they take it out.
Yes.
Rico, at this stage, are you getting? Are you running out of activities for the kids?
Running out? No, we're not running out of activities. We're starting to use the same activities over and over again. But
okay, new stuff. Okay.
No, we're busy. I mean, we've tricked them into thinking cleaning up is cool. Like, they helped yesterday.
Oh,
Milo
nice.
Was cleaning up his kitchen. So, I mean, we've tricked them, too. But today will be good because it's nice out. We'll be able to do some more stuff.
Gotcha.
That's right. It's supposed to be nice today and tomorrow, so take full advantage of that. All right. So, it sounds like there's a proposal coming from the owners to the players for an 82-game season. It sounds like there's universal DH and the 10-team divisions and the home parks with no fans that we've discussed. But, Chris, the big thing that it sounds like is the owners are going to want the players to take a 50-50 split.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm going to back up a little bit. You said a 10-team division. I thought that the proposal said that you would play the games in your division, and then the interleague opponents that you would play would be in the same geographical area. Is that what they're doing?
Last I saw was the 10 teams, but you could be correct. Let me do a little research here while we talk about what I think is the real elephant in the room is the 50-50 split here.
Yeah, I mean Tony Clark said it. He said that anytime you want to restrict the players' pay based on the revenue that's coming in, that's a salary cap. The owners can try to frame it however they want, but the reality is that if you want to talk about losing the revenue from ticket sales and all gate-related income, then you're going to limit what the players are going to have allocated for the cost. And to me, it just doesn't feel right. I think Tony Clark is absolutely correct in this. I just don't like him articulating that through the media because I don't think they have to. I think the priority should be what we're talking about to make sure that we can keep these players safe. That's what should be at the forefront of the conversation. So anything that the owners put in the media in terms of where the players and the owners are at with the negotiations to move forward with baseball this year, the priority should be, or the conversation should be, around what are we going to do to ensure the safety of these players? Because if we do come back and play a truncated season, all the players that are going out there are going to absorb an abnormally high level of risk. And so for that, I think that the owners need to have clear protocols in place in order to keep the player safe. We ultimately know it's going to come down to dollars and cents, but the conversation should be completely different.
Yeah, let's not get this twisted. I mean, this is the owners trying to negotiate through the media. I mean, this is meant, I mean, what this proposal with the 50-50 revenue split was meant to back the players into a corner where they look bad in this situation, where now it's a fight about money. When we're talking about unemployment and this pandemic and everything else, this was done for a reason. And Tony Clark, it's his job to stand up for his players. It's a bad look. It's a terrible look. We all understand that. But I mean, to Chris's point, the players are assuming 100% of the health risk. 100% of the health risk is on the players and the staff involved. Now the owners have to deal with the financial risk. But as far as the players were concerned, in good faith, which again, quotations in good faith, because players don't trust owners, period, was that we negotiated, we get prorated salaries under the assumption that you already knew that for however long it was, there'd be no fans in seats. Now all of a sudden, now it's a reality and that things are going to change. We've stuck by the fact that this is going to be a free marketplace. Major League Baseball will not have a salary cap. It's like the reason why the starting quarterback doesn't want the backup quarterback to play. Because you don't want a chance. You don't want to lose your job. You don't want people to see how good the backup quarterback can be. Mm-hmm. Is you don't want to get the owners have a taste of a salary cap, which is a 50-50 revenue split is going to be a salary cap. Because your CBA ends in
2021.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, this is what the owners have wanted the entire time, because owners don't trust other owners, how they spend their money. And yeah, I mean, you're in an unfortunate. You're in with the pandemic and what's going on and everything else. Everyone's dynasty baseball. But business is business, and you know it's Tony Clark. He'll look like the bad guy here, but it's his job to protect his players. Now the players need to completely change the narrative and focus more on the health aspect. Mm-hmm. Like behind closed doors, you can have these the money conversations, but your main focus should be getting out to whoever you need to get it out to. Is that the player's biggest concern is not money.
Yes,
it's their health and well-being.
And right. Sean Doolittle has been doing a good job of that, Rick. His wife has a respiratory illness, and so it's a legitimate concern from his standpoint, because he's putting himself at risk of contracting COVID-19, and if he's in proximity to his wife, then you could be talking about a life-threatening situation. So I just think that ultimately has to be what the focus is on, because not only are the players putting themselves at risk, but they're putting their families at risk as well, because you're talking about having to deal with this pandemic for the entirety of whatever regular season baseball is going to have. And you got to think that players are going to be around their loved ones at some point. You don't want anything to happen to them. Players are willing to incur the risk if it's just them. Players are not willing to put their families, their loved ones, their close friends at risk. And so I think that also has to be factored into the equation when we're talking about who's winning this war in the court of public opinion. I think that's one of the things that nobody's talking about from the player side of it, because you really wouldn't have to deal with this risk if we weren't talking about COVID-19 being something that shut down our country.
But Rick, you brought up something that I could not agree more with. If you turn this into a financial battle, I think that the court of public opinion will be against the players. If you turn this into a safety issue where we feel it's unsafe and we feel that more precautions need to be taken for our safety during the Major League Baseball season, I think that Tony Clark and the union has a decent chance. But if this just turns into a we're not willing to take lesser money, right or wrong, guys, Rick, I think that the players are in the court of public opinion going to be destroyed.
Well, the players always lose. I mean, anytime there's a CBA negotiation, which makes no sense to us as players, is the billionaires always win out in the eyes of the fans and in public opinion. I mean, here's the other thing though too, Dave. At a certain point, the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball need to just take a step back and not be so focused on public opinion. I mean, the NFL hasn't been focused on public opinion. I mean, they put their head down. And they've had their free agency, they've had their draft. I mean, there'll be some bad press. Like, once these leagues decide to start up, whenever that is, there'll be some bad press about, how come you guys get all these tests and everything else? Like, I mean, that's the reality of this situation. Like, you're going to have to be willing to absorb some of that to try to get these things jump started.
Yeah, you can't worry about how this lands. You can't. In terms of these leagues trying to get things ramped back up, if you're baseball, if you're basketball, if you're hockey, I mean, you got to focus on trying to find the best way to plow forward and try to find an agreement that the players from those respective leagues are willing to come along with. I think that has to be what you look for, similar to what Dana White and the UFC did. Like, you have to try to find a way to get this done. Now, clearly within the laws and the ordinances of the states that you're going to be involved in with these games. But, I mean, you have to try to find a way forward. I mean, look at what Dana White did with UFC 249. Like, they actually had a fighter test positive, and they were able to remove him from the card. They quarantined him, and they were able to still have all of the other fights on Saturday night. And by all accounts, it was a huge win. I think if you're baseball, your basketball, your hockey, you got to be thinking along similar lines. Now, everybody understands it's a lot more people that you're dealing with, so it will be a lot more risk. But with high risk comes high reward. And I think right now, based on where the country is at from a mental standpoint, I think that this would be huge in terms of being able to provide a distraction and to have something for folks to watch that could be positive.
Yeah, it'd be great. I mean, to have baseball back, and it could be, at least for a while, guys, baseball on an island, right? If it comes back before the NBA and before the NHL and before any other sport gets going, I mean, you're going to have baseball, and how desperate would you be for it? So, I mean, the positive is huge here. I just think that there's a lot of hurdles that they have to get over to actually get here. I don't think we're all that close to baseball right now.
It doesn't feel like it. I mean, in my opinion, it feels like we're, just from the people that I've talked to in the proposed plans and everything else, it feels like you're probably more likely to see, if I were to power rank the leagues, is probably the NHL.
I would agree.
Like, yeah, you know, they've kind of tried to narrow it down and figure it out. It seems like both sides are kind of on the same page. But I think part of the bigger problem, Dave, is, and when we talk on the show, it's, you know, some of the stuff I'm saying as far as concerns and everything else, I was going back and forth, is from people that I've talked to. Like, these are legitimate concerns, is that as an athlete, you're willing to assume the risk if you know exactly what that risk is. Like, I think that part of the problem is, like, these players don't know exactly what the risk is. Like, I mean, Sean Doolittle brings up long-term ramifications. I mean, who knows? Like, okay, so if I do get COVID-19 and, you know, I don't know, or you don't know my, you know, underlying health issues that I have. Like, for example, when I had my surgery, I was supposed to be non-weight-bearing for 2 months, right? So I'm non-weight-bearing for 2 months. All of a sudden, I develop a blood clot. Now, that's a risk that you run, but they didn't tell me, because they didn't do my blood work, that I was at higher risk because of my blood type. Like, I had a predisposition to blood clots. Had they told me that, you know, I'm probably on blood thinners and this never happens. Like, so guys may have stuff that they don't even know. They get COVID-19 and all of a sudden they're on a ventilator in critical condition. Or what if, you know, I get through it, I'm fine, and then, you know, 10 years down the road, I have, you know, these long-term ramifications because it affected my lung. I have scars on my lungs. Like, there's no clear definition of what the actual risk is. And until you lay that out for the players, you'll have, you know, guys that can afford to miss out on the season, not want to take that risk,
sure,
as opposed to, you know, the guys that can't, that are hell-bent on, I don't care what the risk is, I want to play because I got to get paid.
But, Rick, it's because of what you just outlined, why a 50-50 split is like spitting in the player's face to me if you're the owners making that proposition. Because the players have to deal with the unknown, the uncertainty of how this virus will affect their long-term health, as well as dealing with them potentially affecting their loved ones. Like, that's the part of it that to me is huge in terms of trying to figure out whether this is something that's a fair, equitable deal for the players. Like, everybody knows that the owners are going to take a hit. Everybody realizes the players aren't going to get paid their normal salary. But, I mean, just looking at it on its face, it feels like the owners are in better position to absorb the brunt of the lost revenue than the players are.
Well, of course, they have a ton more money.
The owners are billionaires.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so, yeah, they have more overhead, but they have more resources available to them. I mean, when you're talking about a few millionaires and a lot of thousandaires, I mean, this to me is one of those things where I can't side with ownership, even though I'm on the side of wanting to see baseball get back to play sooner rather than later.
But can't you see, and I'm not disagreeing, this is not my takes, you know, legitimately, but from the mass people out there.
Yes.
Say, I'm going to work. I'm working in a hospital. Maybe I'm taking less money. I'm working in a restaurant. I'm taking less money. I'm a garbage man. I've taken a pay cut. You're a professional baseball player and you're not willing to. And again, I'm not saying it's me, so don't yell at me, but I can see this. You're telling me that people aren't going to be head over heels furious with the fact that players won't accept a whatever, 50-50, 60-40, whatever it happens to be. I'm telling you, people will be livid with the players.
People might be livid with the players, Dave, but they are taking a pay cut. It's going to be a prorated portion of their salary. What we're talking about are the dynamics of the working relationship between the owners and the players, not just for this year, but moving forward. Because as Rick alluded to earlier, you know, the Players Association has to get ready for a renegotiation of the collective bargaining agreement. And if you give the owners a little bit, if you give an inch in terms of a revenue split and trying to base player salaries off of that, then the owners are going to use that as a starting point for their negotiations in 2022 when we're trying to make sure that they have labor peace long term. So I just, for me, this is one of those situations where Tony Clark is absolutely right. He can't give even a little bit to the owners in terms of this kind of concession financially. My only argument was that Tony Clark shouldn't be talking about this in the media, that Tony Clark should be focused on the safety, the health and well-being of the players. Everybody recognizes that baseball is in a position where they could have a huge win, not only now, but long term, just because they increase the visibility of the game because there's nothing else going on. And they've been struggling in terms of being able to find younger fans. This gives you an opportunity to do that. This gives you an opportunity to reignite the country's passion about the sport. But if you look at that situation, the owners are in a better position to realize the long-term effects of that rather than the players. So to me, the revenue split and trying to split things down the middle 50-50 just doesn't make sense. And that absolutely should be the position that the Players Association stands fast on. I just don't want them talking about it in the media.
Yeah, it's the reason why you don't bring a third person into the bedroom. I mean, there's too much risk involved. Because what happens now? What happens if, you know, you've opened Pandora's box? Now, and now you like the third person more than you like your significant other. Now we got real problems. Now they're going to see the 50-50 split. The owners love it, and that's what they'll be pushing for. Now, and here's the other thing, though, Dave. It feels dirty to me. Like, this was calculated by the owners. Like,
100%.
You can't sit there in good faith behind closed doors, have a negotiation as far as, you know, how much players are going to be paid, knowing full well with the uncertainty with COVID that your season's going to at the very least start with no fans in seats. Say, okay, here's the deal. We'll give you, you know, this much money, $170 million up to this point, and then we'll prorate your salaries. So now all of a sudden, know exactly what you just said as far as how, you know, how the fans will react to this being about money. You don't think that the owners knew that putting this in the proposal now all of a sudden makes the players look like the bad guys?
I'm sure. I'm sure that's the plan, don't you think?
It's exactly the plan.
Yeah, of course they want the players to look like the bad guys.
Yeah, because now all of a sudden the players union's in a tough spot because they're trying to fight for their players. And now the owners will make the argument, well, you know, if who knows, all of a sudden now, you know, slowly we'll bring fans into seats and, you know, we'll have a couple extra playoff teams. So that'll mean more, you know, more national money. So more revenue and maybe end up making more money with the 50-50 split. Well, I mean, if you're Tony Clark, are you willing to risk that?
You know, you're not going to make more money. There's no way that the Major League Baseball owners are going to wind up giving more money away. I just don't believe that they would ever come up with a scenario that would be the case.
Oh, exactly right. And that's the feeling from the players is that, these are billionaires. I mean, you don't become a billionaire by giving money away. Like they're smart guys and they just seem like for the most part, they always get the best of us. We don't trust it. Like, so whatever you say as far as your revenues are concerned, we can't see your books. You don't let us see your books. So how do we know? We can't trust your numbers.
Well, becomes very difficult. Becomes a he said, she said kind of a thing. 800-919-3776. Let's listen to Jeff Passan. Was on with Scott Van Pelt last night. Says this week is going to be awful for Major League Baseball.
Let this be reality. This week's going to suck. Like, it just is. But at the beginning of any negotiation, when you've got two Rams that are willing to butt heads like that, that's what this is. You get it out of the way now, you get the positions that are too extreme off the table, and then you make a deal. let's try and ride this one out as smoothly as possible, knowing that in order for a deal to happen eventually, you have to have this at the beginning because it's going to provide the foundation ultimately for them to meet in the middle.
Yeah, so this will be uncomfortable, and hopefully, and I don't know that we can, hopefully we can get past it and wind up with getting some baseball on the field. But for this week, and until these sides start to, you know, move off their point a little bit, I think this is going to be very ugly for baseball and the owners, especially with the landscape of what's going on in the world right now.
No, it's going to be a bad look, Dave, but I mean, Jeff Passan said we got to try to ride this thing out. I mean, guys, we're talking about billionaire owners. They're in a better position to do that than the players are. So I don't think the owners should come back to the players a month after we thought they had an agreement in place on how they were going to handle whatever season that they were going to have in 2020. They shouldn't come back to the table and say, well, this is what we want to do now that we realize that not only are we talking about a shortened regular season, but we're talking about our postseason being compromised as well. That's an additional revenue stream that the owners aren't going to be able to, or potentially wouldn't be able to have access to. And they want to be able to build in whatever protections in terms of their bottom line with this agreement that they're going to have with the players. And I just feel like that's the owners wanting their cake and wanting to eat it too. And I just think that that just doesn't seem like the right thing to do in this situation. Yeah, it's going to be ugly. The owners are going to be missing a lot of revenue. I think they estimated that 40% of the revenue comes from ticket sales and gate related income. So that's a big chunk of money that the owners are going to be missing. But everybody is hurting right now financially. Even the players are going to have reduced salaries. So to come back to the table and ask the players to take even more of a haircut than what you already proposed a few weeks ago, to me, that almost feels like a non-starter.
Yeah, but I think we can all agree. I mean, this is not a fight that needs to be made public because both sides will lose.
You're right. The owners decided that they wanted to try to make it public. And here's the thing I don't understand for the life of me, why Tony Clark decided to take the bait and release the statement that he did. He shouldn't have went down that road with the owners. The priority should have been the health and welfare of the players, period. That's all that should be talked about publicly because of what we're dealing with. And everybody in this country would understand the players' hesitancy to return to sport when you don't have a lot of available drugs for treatment, when we don't have a vaccine for this virus. Like, people would get that. People understand those feelings because everybody is going through it. But what people don't understand is why we're talking about money at a time like this, when the country needs you to get back to doing what you do.
Yeah, what people understand is that we all want sports. We want baseball. And The owners don't play baseball. The players play baseball. So we need them back so we can watch these games. I think what Tony Clark should have said is that the only percentage we're concerned about is the 100% zero split, where our players are assuming 100% of the risk and the owners aren't. That's what we're concerned about right now.
Mm-hmm.
And made it the health issue. Because that's a real concern for a lot of these players.
Especially the ones
that can financially, you know, absorb losing a season.
I'm sure a lot of them can afford to lose a season. 1 year, I would think.
But the problem is it's not just one year.
What's the trickle down, right? What does next year now become?
It's not just 1 year.
Right.
They need to focus on, like, if both sides are really, like, there's a sense of urgency. There has to be to get this thing done. Is that the owners, and again, players won't trust it because we don't get a chance to see their books. There's no complete transparency with how much money they're actually making, is you need to do a better job of laying it out to the players. This is what baseball will look like this year as far as how much money we could lose and how that will affect next season and how much money, you know, you'll lose in free agency or mm-hmm. how much, you know what I mean? Like, explain to them.
Right. Have almost like a pie chart of how it goes from A to B to C, right? Like, yeah, you're going to make this much this year, but here's how it's going to affect your salary moving forward over the next couple of years.
Well, just think about now. I mean, at the time when you heard about, you know, the Biodome, right? And one of the concerns you heard from a lot of players was, oh, I can't be away from my family.
Right.
Think about that. Just think about over the last couple of weeks how that conversation has kind of changed a little bit. Like, if you sit back for a quick second as a player and think about, okay, I start playing, I'm in, you know, a locker room, in a batting cage. Like, there's a good chance I may get COVID-19. Do I really want to be around my family if I get this? Like, do I want to be asymptomatic and bring it home to my family? So now all of a sudden your mindset kind of changes. Like, well, if we do go back, I don't know if I want to be around my family. You know, and that's how quickly this kind of thing, the whole thing changes on you. Because I wouldn't want to be. I mean, I would much rather, if I was one of these, I don't care what sport, I would much rather have the conversation with my wife and kids and say, hey, listen, dad's got to work. Dad's got to get paid. My biggest concern is keeping you guys safe, keeping you guys healthy.
Right.
And the only way I can ensure that is me being away from home for X amount of time.
So what would you do if you were, I mean, for argument's sake, it's hockey, it's the Islanders, they're playing games at the Coliseum. Would you stay at a hotel?
Yeah, I would stay at a hotel.
You would just stay at a hotel?
Yeah, I wouldn't go home.
So really, you're pro-Biodome then?
I am pro, well, I think that's the only way. I mean, that's what UFC did. I think that's the only way to keep players as healthy as humanly possible. Like, I mean, you're talking about trusting a lot of people, Dave. Like a lot of people. When you start talking about team sports, I mean, you're counting on, in hockey, I mean, especially because they'll have expanded rosters too. I don't know what, you know, 29 guys to be doing the right thing when they leave the building.
Yeah.
That's a lot of guys to be trusting.
That is a lot of guys to be trusted, but that's why I said at the beginning of this thing, if you're going to have a season in baseball, it's going to have to be widespread available testing, and you're going to have to test people that aren't symptomatic, and it's going to have to be regularly. Like, you're talking about one or two tests per week just to ensure that everybody in the workplace environment is being as safe as they can and you're taking all the possible precautions. Because, yeah, like UFC did this past weekend, we thought it was great. It's easier to have a situation where you have the fighters fly in and get tested and then quarantine for a couple of days before the event. But when you start talking about a baseball season, you're talking about months on end. I think asking players to stay in a hotel or a biodome is just unrealistic just because of the duration of what you're asking them to do. I just don't think that that's even possible. So I think any return to baseball is going to have widespread available testing, and it's going to have to be regularly.
Yeah, but see, if I'm Major League Baseball, if I'm Tony Clark, I'm using that. Like, I'm talking to my players, and I'm saying, hey, you know, if I can use you being away from your families for...
Yeah, it's a concession that the players... It's another concession that the players are making. So if the players are giving something else to the owners, then they should get something in return.
Yeah, because again, I mean, you're going back to if you guys are being, if you as owners are as concerned as you're saying about, you know, my safety and my family safety and everyone involved, then the safest way to do it, and we're not going to like it, but we'd be willing, you know, if the money was right to do it, is to create some kind of biodome situation.
Mm-hmm. Which they had originally planned.
Well, because you're talking about,
it looks like they're moving away from that.
I mean, listen to Sean Doolittle's, I mean, do yourselves a favor if you want to read his thread, because he poses a ton of good questions. I mean, you're still talking about people getting, like, teams getting on buses, you know, teams getting on planes. So now all of a sudden you got pilots and you have flight attendants and you have bus drivers and you have, you know what I mean? You're going city to city and now it's a new hotel with a new hotel staff and the person cooking your food. I mean, there's still travel involved as opposed to if you're all in a, you know, a certain area. I mean, the UFC was in a hotel. They were in a hotel. That's why it worked. You get a wristband, you're in the hotel. It's one spot. You can control that.
It was a lot less people that you have to deal with in UFC than you do Major League Baseball.
Agreed. But I mean, the plan that they laid out is that it's going to be at your home park, and then you're going to be, as an adult, responsible for doing all the right things once you leave the park.
Right. And do you trust people right now?
No, I don't. Yeah. I mean, you see it in this country, man. There are some people that approach this thing like it's, you know, it's just a glorified flu.
I was reading something in the New York Times this morning. It said they had a huge 12 and under baseball tournament, huge, in the Midwest this weekend. Like 40 teams coming from multiple different states.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
So, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Now, there's everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when, of course, you're sick. Cover your cough or your sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. Let's bring them in. One of our favorites from, of course, ESPN, Tim Kirchin. Tim, how are you today?
I'm well, fellas. Hope you guys are okay.
Yep, we're all hanging in, doing the best we can. All right, so a lot to get into. Give us an overview of where we are right now and how we move forward between the owners and the players of potentially getting this sport back sooner rather than later.
Well, the owners have come up with a plan that they're going to present a proposal to the players today. My guess is it's going to be rejected because the Players Association sees this as a salary cap. So we have a lot more work to do to get this thing going, to get it on the field by, say, July the 4th, which is what this plan calls for. It worries me tremendously that if we can get through the really difficult parts here, the quarantine, the testing, realignment, scheduling, everything else, we should be able to take care of the money situation, you would think. And yet I think the money is the biggest issue at the moment, and that's really unfortunate because baseball has a real opportunity here to have the sports landscape to itself potentially until football starts. And I think money at this moment could get in the way.
Yeah, but Tim, explain to me where all of a sudden there's this disconnect. I mean, as far as the players are concerned, you know, when they sat down and, you know, thought they had a verbal or a handshake or whatever kind of agreement that, you know, players would receive prorated salaries and, you know, knowing full well that there'd be no fans in stands, why all of a sudden now do we have the owners laying out this plan in the 50-50 revenue split?
Well, this is why the players are upset, and they have a right to be. They were led to believe that this would be prorated, so if you play half the season and you make $5 million a year, then you get $2.5 million. But under this current proposal, they're going to get less than that. Now, I'm no expert on this. I have not seen the original paperwork here. But there seems to be a clause in there that says we agree upon this stuff with the assumption that there are going to be fans in the stands. But with no fans in the stands, that changes the financials and the economics significantly. And that's what the owners are saying. You need to work with us on this. And the players are saying, no, we don't. We had an agreement that you signed. And that's what today is going to be about. And it's going to be contentious from all indications.
Tim, I'm not going to be naive and think that the financial implications are not going to be a huge part of trying to find a path back to playing games. But I got to ask you about this proposal, and specifically, what are the protocols that are recommended by the NIH and the CDC and other public health officials that Major League Baseball has been in coordination with? What are those safety measures that are within this proposal? Do you know?
Well, I don't know specifically, but I do know health is extremely important here to all sides. I know Major League Baseball has spoken to 16 of the 18 governors who have states that have Major League Baseball, and they've gone through all sorts of contingency plans on how we're going to get this done with testing and everything else, and how where we're going to play games, which is still unclear. It just seems to me there are so many roadblocks out there. As much as I think and I hope we're going to play a major league game in July, there's still so much that needs to be done.
So, Tim, if you were asked right now, and Tim Kirchin with us here, 98.7 ESPN, do you, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, you tell us, do you think that we get to see baseball, or do you think that we don't have a season?
Well, I want you to note my heavy sigh and my hesitation. I think we're going to play baseball this season, and I think one way or another, this is going to get figured out. I spoke to someone yesterday, kind of on the inside, who told me this is going to be a bad week. This is going to be the pessimistic week. This is going to be the week that a lot of people say there's no way this is going to happen. But this source whispered again, this is going to happen. We're going to find a way to get through the financials and everything else, compensation, and we're going to figure this out. He called this that bad week's ahead, and we're right in the middle of it now. So I'm going to take the high road and think we're going to play, and we're going to play in July, and we're going to play roughly 82 games. But again, if the whole season is canceled, I would not be shocked.
Tim, from who you've spoken to as far as on the player side, what is, you know, what are the players' thought as far as how how willing are they to assume these health risks? I mean, are they itching, like chomping at the bit to get back, or are there some players that have really, you know, real concerns that will lead them to maybe not make the decision to come back?
Well, I spoke to someone kind of in the know on these things, and he gave me a very subjective answer, but he thinks 98% of the players just want to play. That's all they think about. And they need to get paid also. Not everyone is in this $30 million a year bracket, and they can afford not to play. A lot of players have to play in order to make enough money to live. So I think the majority of players are going to say, let's find a way to play no matter what. However, if they feel like they're not being compensated fairly, they're going to take a stand, because that's what this union has always done. So that's why we're in such a tricky spot as of this moment.
And Tim, you're leading me to my next question. Clearly, this feels like an overreach by the owners, or at least that's what Tony Clark feels by being able to come out and make such a strong statement. How much do you think the players' position has to do with not only trying to find a path forward that makes sense for this year, but also the impending CBA negotiations?
Right. That's so critical here, that the relations between the two have to keep up in order that we don't have a work stoppage a couple of years from now. But again, what Tony Clark said, when he mentions the word salary cap, those are, of course, the two worst words that this union can possibly use, and that's how they see it, and they're going to stand down and say, no, we're not going to accept that. But yes, everything that is done these days has ramifications for a new CBA, and that's why this is, again, such an important week, such an important negotiation to figure out how we're going to get back on the field. Because if it gets really bad, it could affect the CBA in a very bad way.
Tim Kirkjian with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So, Tim, I guess the proposal, correct me if I'm wrong, is to have spring training 2.0 around June 10th, and then around July 4th will be the start of this truncated season, right?
Right. So that's the way it's been presented to me for the last 2 weeks. Mid-June, spring training begins. Early July, the season begins. But again, only if the testing is correct, if the health situation is right, and the money is right.
Okay, so let me follow that up. So when do we have to have a deal in place for this to realistically get done? Like, do we have 2 weeks? Do we have 10 days? Do we have a week? Because, I mean, once it's agreed to, I'm sure then a ton of work has to be done just to get everything in order.
Yes, I would say this had better be decided in the next week to two. Otherwise, it's going to be a major, major issue getting the players into spring training facilities. And let's understand, you know, the spring training isn't going to be a normal spring training either. Where exactly are we going to hold it? Is it going to be in Florida? Is it going to be in Arizona? Is it going to be all over the country? Are we going to do it from our home cities? None of these questions have a clear answer at this point. So I think they need to know for sure in 2 weeks, but I think they'd be much, much, much better off to know a week from now, all right, this is the plan, we've agreed upon it, we're moving forward, and spring training is going to be in full bloom, let's say, June the 10th. We'll see if that works.
The great Tim Kirkjian joins us here on the show. Tim, selfishly, as a Mets fan, I'm hoping this is something that, you know, gets passed and sticks. Do you think that the universal DH will be something that gets passed this season and just kind of sticks as we move forward?
I don't think it's that simple. I think it's, again, another bargaining chip, and the union loves the DH, as it should. It's a high-paid job. It's a job, period. And I think if we use it this year, and I'm sure that we will, maybe that will gather some momentum to keep it for next year and beyond, but it's still has to be negotiated. Everything has to be negotiated here. So is it a step in the right direction? Yes. Is it a slam dunk? I don't think so.
I wanted to also ask you about the element of this that's a little bit different with the upcoming season. They're going to expand the playoffs from 10 teams to 14 teams. What are your general thoughts on that?
Well, I'm against, like, all of this. None of this stuff is, it really makes me happy, I guess, as a 63-year-old man and a purist and a traditionalist and everything. But I'm also in the camp now. I hope I say this right. Look, I don't care what we do, just as long as we start to play. If we have 14 playoff teams, even though I'm against that, I'm for it in this crazy season that is going to happen or not going to happen. The DH, that's so unimportant for the bigger issues out there. Whatever's going to get these guys back on the field, get some people paid, not just owners and players, but people around ballparks, and hopefully, you know, help the morale of the country. I'm okay with almost anything that baseball does this year, as long as they don't say, hey, this really worked, we're going to play all games, seven innings next year and every other year. That's when you're going to have to put your foot down.
Tim Kirkton with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Tim, do you think there's going to be a star player who does make a lot of money? Because you talk about a guy, the guys that need to come back and need to pay and can't afford to sit out. Do you think you could see a big-time player that makes a lot of money that says, you know what? I'm just going to sit this one out. I'm just not going to come back. I'm not going to play this year. I'm financially completely stable, and I'll be back for the 2021 season.
You know, I asked that exact question to a major league manager 2 days ago, and he said there's no chance of that happening. He said every player is going to look, and if 99.9% of the other players are back, they're coming back. Nobody's just going to sit out and say, I'm not playing because this is not worth it to me. If you play and all your teammates are there and they've all gone to spring training and you're just sitting at home saying, I'm going to sit this one out, this manager told me that simply is not going to happen. Now, am I that certain of it? No. But my guess is if 98% of the players are in, I think eventually 100% of the players will be in.
All right, Tim, last one for me. And this is here, I mean, I know there's a lot more questions than we have answers. But, I mean, as far as what we're dealing with here in New York and how badly we've been hit by this thing, I mean, I think, you know, as far as in its state to state, I mean, the chances of the Yankees or Mets having games with fans in seats seems a long way away. I mean, if you're so concerned about the gate and people coming to games, wouldn't it make more sense to try to handpick certain cities that haven't been hit as hard by coronavirus that are closer to having people in seats to make more money if that's a concern?
Yes, and I think that is one of the situations they're dealing with. What if the governor of Pennsylvania says, yes, the Phillies and the Pirates can play at home? And the governor of Ohio said, well, the Reds and the Indians can't play at home. What do you do then? That's why the scheduling is so difficult. But, yes, if certain places are ready to put fans in the stands, I think they should. I think the fans have a great deal to do with all of this, not just the money they bring in, but what they bring to the playing of a game. But I still think at this point, if we start the season, we're going to start with no fans in the stands, and then they're going to try to figure it out from there.
Well, yeah, Tim, I know we're going to probably start with no fans in the stands, but there's no guarantee that's the way the season is going to end. If, in fact, the owners decide that they want to have fans and the ordinances in whatever state they're playing will allow so, I mean, are the players going to have any say in terms of that being something that they're willing to accept?
Well, the players are going to have a say in all of this. They're going to have to agree to all of this. And, yes, I think they will say, as long as it's safe, I think we should have fans in the stands. Because, let's face it, guys, let's just say you're the Tampa Bay Rays and there are no fans in the stands and you have to pay all the salaries of all the players. And even though they don't draw a lot of people, they need that revenue, that 30 or 40%, whatever you want to call it, of their gross revenue, they need that. And if you're not going to get it, how much financial trouble are they going to be in if you have to pay the players completely and you have no fans in the stand? These are all factors that have to be looked at.
All right. Well, Tim, thanks for trying to make a little bit of sense with this with us today. We appreciate it. And stay healthy, stay well. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care.
Good stuff. That is, of course, Tim Kirkton, who provided a little bit of insight. I mean, there's just so much unknown right now. And that's the thing that's kind of daunting, right? I mean, we don't have so many of these answers as we sit here potentially how far away from starting the season. Not far.
No, not far, and a decision has to be made. I mean, you have haves and you have have-nots. I mean, Tampa's one of those teams that doesn't have – I mean, they have people that watch the games. I mean, they're one of – as far as TV, you know, TV ratings are concerned, I mean, people are locked into the Rays, but people don't show up. So, I mean, they don't have much of a gate. That's
why –
the
stadium
is
also awful.
Well, it's not great. I mean, I like it because there's no one there and I can run around trying to catch foul balls and it's, I mean, always the same temperature. You don't have to worry about
sweating. Right, but if I said you can go to Citi Field or, you know.
Citi Field. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Exactly. No, it's a much nicer stadium.
Exactly. But here's where, so we're going to sit here now. We're going to talk about, you know, players being greedy and, you know, 40% of the league is dependent on gates and they're going to lose that revenue. Then in the grand scheme of things, let's be completely honest. If we have, you know, all these teams open up, this thing gets passed, all these teams open up, and they're playing, you know, Yankees at Yankee Stadium, Mets at Citi Field. I mean, I can't imagine that anytime soon they're going to be fans in seats in those stadiums, right?
No.
Okay,
yes,
so they're further away. They're further away than, you know, let's say Florida. So if you're really concerned about gate and revenues, why wouldn't you just handpick a couple locations that you know are closer? So at least there is a legitimate opportunity.
Right, that down
have,
the road you can have fans in the stands. Yeah,
exactly right. Because, I mean, I can't – listen, do you feel comfortable saying right now, forecasting, that at any point this season, during a Major League Baseball season, that Mets and Yankees will have people in seats?
No.
Because I don't.
I don't know how you could.
You can't. But, that, I mean, that's, again, why, I mean – if you're really concerned about the health of the players, and at some point you're going to have to make concessions on both sides, and the concession for the baseball players in an 82-game schedule may be, I'm going to have to be away from my families. If you're trying to maximize health and maximize revenues, then the biodome situation probably makes the most sense. You find a couple cities, maybe it's, you know, instead of two, maybe it's four cities, whatever it is, that you feel like are closer to having fans in seats.
Yeah, you're not going to go California. You're not going to go New York, right? And then you can probably sprinkle around the country and places that you can find, I'd think.
Well, I think from a logistics standpoint, they'll be able to get it all worked out if both sides come to the conclusion that they're going to take an L this year. Like, nobody's going to win this season. So when you start talking about the negotiations, it shouldn't be about winning in the short term. It should be about what's in the best interest of both parties moving forward. And right now, you have a tremendous opportunity to have a lot of eyeballs on your sport because, like Tim just said, you have a chance to be the only team sport in town.
You can own sports.
Yeah, exactly. So you have a chance to be able to do that, and that's going to benefit both sides moving forward. Now, for the owners, it's more of the long game because they'll be around longer. So to me, that would suggest that the owners should be more of the position that we're willing to absorb more of the revenue lost than the players are.
Yeah, and how about all the people, Rick, that say, oh, God, 162 games have become so bland and so boring and so monotonous. Well, I mean, not now. You're going to have 82 games, so every game is going to be, you know, double the prize, really.
It's going to be a sprint. It's going
to
be exciting.
Finish.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. But, I mean, there are – I mean, you heard Tim. I mean, he's as well, you know, well-informed as anybody. I mean, you drive yourself crazy, you know, trying to lay out plans and then going over, okay, if we do this – you know, how do we get past this, this, and this? I mean, even once you come to an agreement, I mean, still, the amount of hurdles and, you know, gymnastics that you're going to have to go to try to get this thing going is
it's
crazy.
It's daunting. It is. It's daunting. We bring him in every Tuesday, like clockwork, and that is our dear friend, Mike Tenenbaum. Good afternoon, Mike. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. We're doing well. We appreciate, as always, you joining us for a couple minutes. Let's get right to it. Sounds like the Jets are either on the verge or it's happened of signing Logan Ryan to a one-year deal. I like this. What's your thought on this if they add him for depth in the secondary?
I like it. He's a good player. He's been productive in his career, and these guys are hard to find. So that, I think, would be a really good sign for them if that comes to fruition.
Mike T, I mean, one of the other areas of concern for the New York Jets headed into the season is edge pass rush. What would your, you know, what would the negatives be in your mind of the Jets potentially signing someone like Jadeveon Clowney?
Yeah, I'll tell you this, Rick. I think he makes sense for the Jets or the Giants. I've always been a fan of his. I think he's more productive against the run than people give him credit for. Obviously, the big knock on him is he's only played in 16 games once in his career, but he's only 27 years old. I think he's a three-down player, and candidly, if you – outside of the Cam Newton discussion, I think he's the best player out there. even with somebody like Logan Ryan. I think Logan Ryan's a good player at a premium position. I think Clowney has a chance to dominate games, and if you can make sure that he's healthy, I think that's a great signing, really, for either the Jets or the Giants.
Mike T, there's a report out there that multiple teams are exploring the prospects of hosting their training camp in a different site than they're accustomed to just because of what's going on with the pandemic. I mean, I need you to put your GM hat on this one. Is that something that you would do if you were a general manager of a club right now? Is that something that you would entertain?
Yeah, absolutely. And candidly, Chris, that only has something like a limited sort of purview of like what it means with the pandemic from a standpoint of, I think it's so helpful to do that. I learned firsthand with Rex Ryan about going away to Cortland, New York, and Rex's line that I'll never forget is, look, we're going to go away as 50 individuals and 50 cars, but if those same 50 players come back in 10 cars, we're going to leave as individuals and come back as a team. So I understand the pandemic has brought that to the surface, but I think you get such a benefit in terms of the morale that you build, that it makes a lot of sense to me.
Mike T with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So Mike, let me ask you this. You mentioned Cam Newton. Is the best thing for him to wait and to see what team needs a quarterback eventually when someone goes down so that he can move right in as the starting quarterback? Because at some point, a quarterback will go down during the course of the season. Or is the best thing for him to sign somewhere, play as the backup, and you know, I guess from his mindset, hope that at some point during the season he winds up as the starter?
Yeah, Dave, the more I look at it, the one team that just jumps out to me is Pittsburgh, because if I'm running the Steelers, look, I have a really, really good young defense. I have pressure players. I check a lot of boxes. I think the one thing they don't have is a bridge from Ben. And if you go back a year ago, they traded a player I like a lot, Josh Dobbs, a young, talented quarterback who 2 years ago played exceptionally well in a preseason game against Green Bay. They traded him. We saw firsthand that Mason Rudolph isn't good enough. At the end of the day, he's just not good enough to be their future. And Doug Hodges is, you know, a fun little story, but no one's going to, you know, confuse him with being a starting NFL quarterback. So if you could go out and get what was the first pick in the draft, who's taking the team to a Super Bowl when he's healthy, and you have a 38-year-old quarterback that's already hurt, like, I think to me that would be such a great opportunity for Pittsburgh, and it could really lead eventually to a bridge after what, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, we saw what they were without him last year. To me, that would just be a great opportunity for them.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike T, with the virtual offseason and the unknown of, you know, potentially training camps and everything else, is the effect of the rookies? I mean, is there a position that you look at that because of what's going on during this offseason that will have less of an impact than usual?
Well, you know what's interesting is just talking to a number of teams, like what everyone's saying is it's the relationships that you can't build. So I think it's going to – I think when you look at it geographically, you're seeing people that have to relocate. You know, Justin Herbert's never left Oregon before. He has to move to Southern California. I think these quarterbacks are going to take a while. I think other players like running backs, corners, you may be able to plug and play and say, hey, you know, learn these three or four plays and know them well. So I think it's going to be a little bit position-specific, but I think we're going to see some real growing pains just because, again, relationships can't be built, and a lot of these guys are moving, and these are their first jobs that they've ever had.
Mike T, and that being said, with the growing pains, I guess I want to ask you about both the signal callers for the New York teams. Both of these are young quarterbacks that are trying to develop, and clearly this offseason is not what's ideal in terms of their overall growth. So what do you anticipate will be the biggest challenge for them in terms of being able to overcome the offseason and be on track to continue to ascend as a young franchise quarterback?
Yeah, I think this is where Darnold is clearly ahead of Jones. First of all, I think, you know, both teams did a good job of, and we've talked about this quite a bit, you know, they fortified their line, so I think that's going to help both. But to the extent that Daniel Jones is now the starter from day one, he has to learn a new offense. He has to build a relationship with Jason Garrett. Again, those things, guys, and you guys know this as former players, those things don't happen overnight. I think for Darnold, hopefully, you know, they've done a couple of things at receiver. Maybe Mims is a guy that steps up early. He was a guy that a lot of people liked that. I think that was a great opportunity that he fell to them. And obviously, you know, what they did on the offensive line. So I think Darnold has a better chance just because of the continuity he has with Coach Gase and Dow Loggins, the offensive coordinator.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So, excuse me, let me look at the Giants with you, because I've looked at it from, and I'm not saying you're wrong clearly, but kind of a different avenue of, you know, you have a second-year quarterback, you have an established running back that you like, the receivers are decent or even a little bit better. You have a tight end when healthy, and I know it's a big win, but when healthy is a really nice player. And you've clearly revamped the offensive line. Am I looking at this wrong to not think the Giants will be a better offensive team in year two of Daniel Jones?
Yeah, no, I think they should be. You know, the challenge, candidly, is, you know, if you were drafting the quarterbacks in the NFC East, you know, at best he's clearly the third, and he may be the fourth best quarterback in the division. So as you start trying to orchestrate and say, like, all right, if we're the Giants, how do we win our division? I don't think it's going to be by saying, well, we're going to outplay you at the quarterback position. You know, for years when we compete against New England at either the Jets or the Dolphins, we always thought about, hey, we had to have a better defense, or how else can we control the game? Because over a 16-game season, I don't think any of the four of us would not take Prescott or Wentz, you know, before Daniel Jones. And obviously, you know, what's going on in Washington, you would have to give that a grade of incomplete. So, you know, my biggest concern for them is, you know, when you look at their defense, Dave, I don't see enough players on that side of the field that are going to make
plays
with them.
That was kind of the point that I think the offense needs to be ahead of the defense, because I think the defense will struggle.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, I think what they did for the offensive line will make Jones better, Ingram better, Barkley better. Agreed there. I just think it's going to be an uphill battle for them in the NFC East for the next couple of years because of Prescott and Wentz.
Mike T, from the people that you've talked to, and I know, you know, the NFL kind of just has put their head down and, you know, done the draft, done free agency, says they're going to start the season on September 10th. I mean, if push came to shove and the NFL could start the season, but there'd be no fans in the seats, would the NFL choose to do that, or would they try to buy some time and push the season back, do you think?
Yeah, my sense is I think the NFL feels incredibly fortunate that, as you know, we're dealing with this obviously awful tragedy in our country and the world, they have the luxury of time. And, you know, to the extent that if you think about it, you know, we had this incredible Super Bowl, Mahomes comes back, and literally, you know, then that's when the world starts to unravel. And I think they're going to just keep taking the benefit of watching everybody else go through their fits and starts and adjust accordingly. So I think, you know, just even at ESPN, from watching Korean baseball and seeing them have, you know, cardboard fans sitting, you know, having masks, you know, all the different things. I think we'll know a lot more once the NBA and MLB goes back. But again, I think when we saw the schedule, what definitely popped out to me, guys, was the Super Bowl could go back about a month. So they could literally shift everything to, I believe it's mid-October, play a 16-game season, and just end a little bit later. So if you're running the NFL when it's all said and done, if you had a 16-game season, maybe you eliminate the byes, maybe you eliminate the Pro Bowl. When it's all said and done, you know, that's a pretty good result. And hopefully, you know, for everybody, you know, the world looks a little bit different, you know, in the middle of October than it does today.
Mike T, that's the long-term outlook. But in the short term, I mean, the NFL has let it be known that these teams can start making preparations to allow people to start coming back into the building at the end of this month. How far away do you think we are from seeing players actually going back into NFL facilities?
Yeah, Chris, to me that's baby steps, because, you know, you can't have a setback. I mean, you really have a zero-sum game when you have players in the building. You cannot bring a healthy player into your building and have him get sick. So I just know from a team perspective, that's first, second, and third in everyone's mind. I think you could see the business side open up, not to say that they're not as important, but, you know, if you lose somebody in the marketing department and they have to quarantine for 14 weeks, that's different than if Saquon Barkley goes into quarantine. So I think all the teams are just being very cautious, being very prudent to make sure that they have the requisite sort of infrastructure that as players come in, from social distancing to testing, that they're not going to have any setbacks. And I think that's why you're seeing teams appropriately move, you know, somewhat slowly.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, what's the team that you look at this season, if hopefully we're going to have a season, that goes from the outside looking into to a playoff team? Like, is it Cleveland? Is it Arizona? Is it a different team than that? What's that one team that you say they weren't there last year and they struggled, but this year, you look out for them?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's Cleveland. And because if you just look at it systematically, if we define the job as, hey, we got to make Baker Mayfield better, you know, let's look at the two tackles. They got Jedrick Wills. They signed Jack Conklin. They added Austin Hooper from Atlanta. They to me, have checked a lot of boxes of turning a weakness into a strength. And I think the other thing they had to do, which I think we would all agree, is they had to turn the noise down. And to their credit, Kevin Stefanski, you know, we're not hearing a lot out of there. And I think they have some talent, and they just have to go to work. So now their challenge, similar to the Giants, is, you know, you're facing Lamar Jackson, you know, two times a year, mm-hmm. Roethlisberger coming back two times a year. All of a sudden, a healthy Roethlisberger and a returning MVP, you know, that division looks a little bit different than maybe it did a year ago. So I always think about how do you win your division? But to the extent I think Cleveland's righted its ship, and I think they're certainly heading in the right direction.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on the show. Mike T, I'm not going to ask you about Dak Prescott. I feel like we ask you about that every single time we have you on. More of a question about, you know, the finances of the NFL. At what point, or do we ever get to a point, it seems like, you know, the next quarterback up is the highest paid player in the NFL, and that's just the way the, you know, it works. Do we get to a point where that's some, at a certain point, has to stop? That you're going to get yourself, teams going to get themselves in trouble where they're paying, you know, this absurd amount of money to a quarterback that really doesn't deserve to be paid that much money?
You know, Rick, that's a great tee up for me to have a shameless plug that if you go to Real Tannenbaum, I had a tweet on that earlier today.
Oh.
So I really appreciate it. yeah, no question about it. It's hard to win a championship when all that money is allocated to a veteran quarterback, and that's why right now Kansas City, Baltimore, there should be a huge sense of urgency of trying to win a title. You know, we saw that with Seattle. They had a great nucleus around Russell Wilson when he had a rookie contract, and then he gets paid, and it's just hard to keep that nucleus together. So I totally agree with that. It's really about trying to keep that nucleus together. And I've said this multiple times. If I'm Patrick Mahomes, if I'm the Chiefs, I put Patrick Mahomes on the same side of the table and say, all right, it's not the verb isn't spend. We're going to allocate. And if you don't want to have Chris Jones here, the talented defensive tackle, if you don't want to have Sammy Watkins here, let's have a goodbye party. You'll pay for it. And we'll be playing with a whole bunch of rookies. So how much of this pie do you really want to have?
Mike T, just a follow-up, and this is the last one for me. Okay, so in saying that, right, I mean, most players are focused on, you know, actual guarantees. Like, what's the guaranteed money? So if you're the GM of Baltimore or you're the GM of the Kansas City Chiefs, and you start thinking about long-term how much money you're going to have to pay these quarterbacks, do you take the calculated risk of offering someone like Pat Mahomes, let's just say, you know, a 10-year deal with $250 million guaranteed just so you keep him locked in at the $25 million bucks a year?
Yeah, I think you got to get him done as soon as possible. It's really it's only going to get more expensive. So, like with Dallas, for example, you get Dak Prescott signed, he'll be the highest paid player, guys, for about 10 or 15 minutes. Mahomes, Jackson, they will go right by him. So the timing of these things is really important, and I just think time is not on the side of any of these teams. Like, the good news is you have a franchise quarterback. The bad news is with 10-year labor peace, despite the pandemic, guys, we know that football is going to draw, you know, just look at the draft. The ratings were absolutely incredible. So I would just move sooner than later. And even if you have to take a risk on the guaranteed money, Rick, I think it's worth it in the end.
Mike T, with the NFL expanding the playoff field from 12 teams to 14 teams, do you see teams at the midseason trade deadline deciding to be more aggressive this year, more activity?
Oh, I think so. I think we're going to see such an interesting storyline because, as Dave alluded to earlier, Chris, like, we'll have a couple of surprise teams. We always do. But just given the nature of all the movement and unusual offseason, you know, is it Tyrod Taylor that comes out of the gate strong, or does Drew Locke take a huge year in year two? So there's a lot of variables. We'll see how it plays out. But I do think to the extent that there'll be a lot of roster management, I think we'll see a lot of trades throughout the year.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Two-parter for me. One, Rick has alluded that he's asked his final question in the interview. Do you believe that to be true?
It would be the first time. This would be a historic moment for the four of us if that was.
Yeah, so I tend to agree with you there. And secondarily,
I would be disappointed if it was.
Yeah, no, I agree. Bears quarterback week one, Foles or Trubisky?
It's Nick Foles, Nick Foles, Nick Foles, draw a line. How can you possibly put out a guy that was last in the NFL in yards per attempt and the field gets compressed on him? Trubisky is just not good enough. You know, if I was the GM of the Bears and he's a good guy, Ryan Pace, I would take a page from Tampa Bay, which is this. Jason Light, the general manager of the Buccaneers, drafted Jameis Winston. It didn't work out. And look, I know all about drafting quarterbacks that do work out and don't. It's just what you sign up for when you work for a front office. However, no one in Tampa Bay is writing anything about Jameis Winston not working out. They're all talking about Tom Brady. And if I'm the Bears, I just turn the page forward. I have a Super Bowl winning quarterback in Nick Foles. He knows the offense really well with Matt Nagy. We move forward and, you know, the Trubisky thing didn't work out. And I know that's a tough pill to swallow, but ultimately that's the reality of what's going to happen there.
Wow. It seems like we might be done.
Well, I don't want to disappoint Mike T. But here's the thing. I don't want to disappoint Mike T. Mike T, here's the one thing, though. And this is less of a question and more coming at you. And I don't like to do this because you know how much I love you. And I'm actually sitting here sipping on a soy tea latte right now in memory of you. I mean, don't you run the risk, though?
In memory, can I die?
Well, no, because we haven't seen each other. Usually, I mean, you're sitting right next to me. You're midway through and answering a question. You're taking a sip. I mean, you're shotgunning a hot tea latte. I mean, I miss it. No, but here's the thing, though. I mean, we're talking about Nick Foles like he's Tom Brady. I mean, Nick Foles, I mean, he lost his job to Gardner Minshew. I mean, don't you run the risk that if you do start with Nick Foles, you may have lost Mitch Trubisky as opposed to you start with Mitch Trubisky and you can always, you know, replace him with Nick Foles because you know Nick Foles is capable mentally of coming off the bench?
Yeah, I really just see it different, Rick. The greatest people I know in life, be it leaders of industry, coaches, franchise quarterbacks, they all have mental toughness. And if Mitch Trubisky can't get off the deck, wipe himself off, and say, hey, I got a fresh start here, then he's not an NFL starting quarterback anyway. But to me, you want to win as many games as quickly as possible. I know Foles isn't perfect, but I think he fits well with that offense. He's smart. You could question his durability. I think that's totally fair. Last year was certainly unusual in Jacksonville for a lot of reasons, you know, given what happened with Jalen Ramsey. And I'm not making excuses, but I just think from a skill set standpoint, we're talking about two different levels. And I don't know where Trubisky would have been drafted if the Bears passed on him. I'm not sure how many other teams saw him as a first-round quarterback. And I think what happens in the NFL, and Chris knows this as a former defensive player, which is, when you know your opponent's weakness, you want to rip their heart out with it.
Mm-hmm.
And when he can't throw the ball 20 yards to his left outside the numbers with any consistency, to me that becomes ultimately a fatal flaw. And he has not shown the consistency to have any accuracy down the field, especially to his left. And that ultimately could be his professional demise.
Mike T, because it always feels like this from year to year, you know, there's always a team that wins the division that finds themselves on the outside looking in on the playoffs the following season. Outside of the New England Patriots because of the unknown at their quarterback position, which division winner from 2019 could you see on the outside looking in on the playoffs in 2020?
Yeah, I would say the South, the AFC South, just because I really, you know, I've always been a big believer in Ryan Tannehill. And, you know, obviously we'll see how things play out with Houston, but the other thing I just think at the end of the day, guys, is you don't trade great players. And DeAndre Hopkins is a great player. He's not a good player. So I would think on paper, you know, looking at it, I think Tennessee, to me, is the favorite over Houston in the South.
All right, Mike, we're going to attempt to let you go again. We'll see if Rick jumps in here and throws something else at you. But it seems like that's not the case. So.
Mike T, what's going on in Jacksonville? I mean, is Jacksonville just trying to be the worst team in the NFL? In your opinion?
I certainly hope not. I mean, Doug Marrone's a good coach. He's won a lot of games in his career at multiple spots. That place should be a destination. You know, if you think about the taxes, the weather, practicing on grass, playing on grass, that team and franchise, that should be a destination. And candidly, it's somewhat disappointing that it's not. I was wrong. I thought they were going to be exceptional last year. The fact that so many players want to leave there, that's a concern, you know, from an ownership standpoint. When you have the Jalen Ramseys of the world, the Yannick Ngakwes, Calais Campbell wasn't upset to leave. You know, that's something that you have to drill down on, because really, when you look at it, you would think that a lot of NFL players would want to live there and play there.
Are you in love with Trevor Lawrence, like so many seem to be?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I don't know if it's love, but I think he certainly is clearly ahead of Justin Fields right now. I think Fields is really intriguing, Dave. Guy had 41 touchdowns in the Big Ten his first year of starting. To me, the more interesting question right now is, what in the world was Kirby Smart thinking? And Kirby Smart's a really good coach. I like him a lot. But when I went to practice last year at Ohio State and Justin Fields went by me at practice, I thought I was looking at Cam Newton. The guy was a physical stud. He throws 41 touchdown passes. And I'm thinking to myself, like, Jacob Fromm, the incumbent quarterback at Georgia, must be Superman. How in the world is he keeping this guy on the bench? So that, to me, from a scouting standpoint, is going to be question one, two, and three, which is, how in the world did you not start at Georgia? Jacob Fromm turned out to be a fifth-round pick.
Mike T., how is scouting going to work if the college football season has to get pushed back to the spring semester?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, Chris. I think they'll have to move the draft back if we don't have college football. And I think it's going to be really unfair to ask some of these players to play in, what, 25, 28 games, depending on what happens. So I do think what we would see is, as much as we would have a quote-unquote normal NFL season with 16 games pushed back, I think you would just have to move the draft back to, you know, maybe this time next year. You know, maybe it's a Memorial Day draft with college football starting on Feb 1. A lot has to be worked out, obviously, but I know there's already been some discussion about what that could look like to get a full football season, both at the college and pro level.
All right, Mike, before Rick jumps this, we're going to let you go. Thank you. Thank you as always. We'll talk to you next Tuesday. Be healthy. Be safe. We'll talk to you in a week.
All right, guys. Yeah, you too. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Absolutely. That, of course, is Mike Tenenbaum, who answers, I mean, so many questions, like rapid fire here with him.
Excellent. That's why you love him, though. I mean, that's why you love him. And we had him for, what, 23 minutes?
23 minutes.
And, I mean, sometimes we'll do interviews where you have 23 minutes and you'll get to ask a
Those
question
are the worst.
Each.
Oh.
Yeah, so, I mean,
how awful are the interviews when you have a 23-minute interview and you ask two questions?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. If you have one of those days where you'd rather not do much talking, you just
eat
up a whole segment.
I don't think it's awful when we have Jordan Renan. Come on, guys.
Wow. That's a shot. That was a shot.
That was a shot.
Yeah, that was a huge shot. Poor Jordan. Poor guy sitting at home with his sweatpants.
I love Jordan, man. Come on. You guys know I love Jordan Renan. We go back.
Yeah, here's the other thing. By the way, okay, so we got to go to break. I get it, but I mean, this is just an observation headed into an observation.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, I'm going to, you know, start amping things up here with this new, you know, bang, marry, kill game, right? Mm-hmm. Division by division.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the biggest topics right now in all of sports, not just professional sports, I mean, every time you turn on Get Up is what's happening with college football. I mean, as far as I know, Chris, there's one of us on the show that has a close personal relationship, it may be his favorite guest, with... I mean, you tell me, one of the foremost authorities on college football. Why do we not have him as a guest?
A great question. He had some interesting things to say this morning on Get Up. I'd love to have him on.
Dave, you can't slip in his DMs. I mean, you're comfortable doing that.
I don't even know who we're talking about.
Who's your favorite guest?
Feinbaum?
If you whispered right now, he could hear you all the way down.
Feinbaum?
Yes. Why do we not have Paul Feinbaum this week?
Well, why are you attacking me?
Because he's your guy. You love him.
Well, let me see if I mean, I don't even think he follows me. I don't even think I can send him a DM.
No, slide into his DMs. You know how to do that. And then let's get this thing worked out.
All you got to do is go outside and holler for him, Dave. You know he'll hear you.
Yeah, just yell.
So if I just scream right now, we could have him in the next segment.
Yeah, just summon him. Yeah, he'll do it.
I don't even have the ability to send him a DM.
We need to find someone that can send him a DM.
But why don't we, if you want him, why don't we have our producer reach out and get him?
Oh, just because I felt like picking on you. Yeah, that's the only reason, really. Because you tried to embarrass me in front of Mike T.
How did I embarrass you?
Oh, Rick's going to jump in with the question.
Well, I mean, you're known. That is your calling card, is that when you think it's over, you jump in.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Dave on this one, Rico. That is what you do.
And you even announce when it's your last question. This is my last question. Look at me, my last question.
Yeah, he's like one of those Geico commercials. It's what you do.
Yeah, that is what I do. But listen, I'm pent up. I got a 3 and a 5-year-old. I'm home by my. Listen, I got a lot going on. I got quite. My brain's working overtime, and he stimulates my brain. What do you want me to tell you?
No, he's terrific. You didn't like the way he answered that question, though, because you gave us this whole song and dance about how you think that Trubisky starts the year. And
well, I don't think Nick Foles is great.
He poo-pooed that.
Well, no, yeah, that's fine. Trubisky's bad, but I mean, let's not pretend like Nick Foles is. I mean.
I don't think either one of them are starting quarterback material.
Yeah, like he's like, oh, you know, Super Bowl winning quarterback. Yeah. And Tom, like you start mentioning Nick Foles and Tom Brady in the same sentence, you lose me. I'm out.
Agreed.
Well, he's better than Trubisky.
Yeah, he's better than Trubisky. Yeah, he's won a Super Bowl, but I don't want Nick Foles as my quarterback for all 16. No. If we're talking about 4 to 6 games, cool. Small sample size. But if he's got to be the guy the entire year, I think he's proven that he's not that guy.
No, they don't have that guy in their roster.
See, this is what I'm talking about, Chris. That's what I needed right there, Chris. Get in my back like that. Thank you very much.
Oh, I got really, you, man.
He really
take that, Dave.
Turned his nose up at you with that question. You could feel
that's
it.
That's fine. It I could feel it a little bit. Well, because he's in this.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.